You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 164 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks, where we are joined by a special third Pelton brother. A Pelton mother.
A Pelton mother. Oh, third Pelton mother.
For the very first time on the Pelton Cast in almost 5 years of existence, or almost 6 years of existence? Not all of which we podcasted during.
Yes, I should have been on sooner.
Our mom is on the podcast.
You should have been on sooner.
I have a lot to say.
Oh my God.
Wow. Okay.
We should have had her on for the Festivus episode because grievances are going to be aired.
That would be fun.
Okay, so we've got.
She's a natural podcaster.
We've got something important. Dynamite drop in. We've got something important to toast to here in a second. So first, courtesy of our beer sponsor, Tavour, we will be drinking this week the Pale? I don't know how you pronounce this one. Oh, by the way, we still haven't looked up whether it's actually pronounced. It could be Tavour. It really could be Tavour.
No one will know. We have no way of finding out.
Tavour, the app, download it.
It's Tavour.
You put it.
Jan, how's that pronounced? Tavour.
I don't know. I like them both.
I like them. Go either way. Anyway, download the app, put in the promo code PeltonCast, and you'll get $10 credit after spending $25 with Tavour or Tavour to get some of the best beers from craft breweries around the country, including the one we're drinking
beers
today.
Beers that you cannot find in Washington State otherwise, we think.
Fair State Co-op from Minneapolis, and this is the Pale Pale Ale, a hazy and tropical pale ale brewed with wheat, oats, Citra, Simcoe, and Denali hops.
I need to get some of those Pelton hops in there.
Malt. It's not actually hops. I need to clarify that from last time. It's Pelton malt.
Okay.
Which is also part of the beer making process, which obviously we know a lot about. As people consume beer as much.
All right, Jan, this would be the time that you open up your drink. On the side, Jan had commented to me that she was interested to try the brand new, you've got Blimes, Bud Light Lime. You've got Orange, Bud Light Orange. And now there's a Blemon Tea. Bud Light Lemon Tea. Jan commented that she was interested to try it. I saw it today at the gas station next to where we got our sandwiches this week. Had to get it. And I had some earlier. We are curious to find out live your thoughts about this beer, Jan.
Okay.
But before then, we have some toast to get to.
We do. An important one. So we've been toasting to a lot of live podcasts this summer. But it's finally time to toast to the third annual PeltonCast live show, which we are ready to announce.
All right.
It will be on Friday, September 6th at Belltown Yacht Club with doors at 7 p.m. Tickets will be $10 with 50% of those proceeds going to the Family First Center in Renton, spearheaded by former Seahawks wide receiver Doug Baldwin, and right near your old house.
You know what the deal is.
In Cascade.
So Belltown Yacht Club.
It is not actually a place where yachts exist.
There are no yachts?
No yachts.
Belltown Yacht Club, a relatively new, and let's just say Seattle's newest music venue.
Is it?
Yeah, we're saying that for the sake of saying things. Jan's like coughing over there. I think you're going to puke. This was like when Al had the sour beer.
Wow.
Wow. I told you it was terrible. What is your review of this beer?
It's odd.
There we go.
It's odd.
In the back of Screwdriver Bar in Belltown, I went in there for a KXP event on their grand opening weekend, and I said to myself, this is a great rock show. We should put some seats down and have some people talking. And that's what we're going to do. The first ever podcast at Belltown Yacht Club, I assume.
Okay. I mean, look, I like to think of the PeltonCast Live is the rock show of live podcasts.
There we go. So some things that you can expect from PeltonCast Live, because we have a special guest to announce.
We got
to
talk about the special guest. I mean, here's the thing that we've done with our podcasts. I don't know if you're aware of this. We like to introduce people to the live podcast game and let them think bigger and better than just us. So 2 years ago, we have Danny Kelly.
Yes.
Now he is Mina Kimes' guest.
Yes.
When she comes to Seattle next month.
Yes.
Last year.
We invented Danny Kelly on live podcasts.
That is accurate.
You're welcome.
Last year, we brought in our friends Tasteful Profanity to help headline the show. This year, they're doing their own podcast.
There we go. Which we will be
guesting
at. With
us as special guests.
On August 16th at Fuel in Pioneer Square.
Tickets for that still available as well. So this year, we had to take it up a notch. We had to unleash upon an unsuspecting public someone who has never, to our knowledge, appeared live in front of a group of people, at least in this context.
Maybe
in a different presentation context, but not in this context, certainly.
This is your chance to live heckle whatever you want to say.
Celebrate, too. I mean,
celebrate, heckle.
Cheer.
Whatever you might want to say to him.
There's certainly going to be a reaction. No one is like, hey, oh, that guy, he's okay. He's fine. You either love him or you hate him. You hate him.
Oh, and if you're a Sony Michelle fan, you hate him. Maybe an Aaron Rodgers fan, too. We are going to have with us live third Pelton brother, the person who may actually be a third Pelton brother. Jan, we should talk about this. We are going to have Ben Baldwin at the Pelton Cast live show. This is the weekend before week one of the Seahawks season. So here's your weekend for you.
The football weekend kicks off with Pelton Cast live. It continues with the Husky game on Saturday.
There we go.
And it culminates with the Seahawks season opening.
Yes.
What about Doug Baldwin?
You know, there might be a reason that his name is Ben Baldwin. It may be Doug Baldwin influenced.
Also, Doug Baldwin may be a little higher than we can aim on the show. We're not actually the Mina Kimes podcast.
Jan's very disappointed in our guest.
I mean, look, we got Danny's economist friend from The Athletic scene.
Wow.
Whew. You clearly need to calm down.
That's your weekend. Friday night, Pelton Cast Live. Saturday, Husky football. Sunday, Seahawks versus...
I don't know.
A team. An NFL team they will be playing, I assure you.
The Huskies, of course, are playing Cal that week.
That's a big game.
The Seahawks are playing Dallas.
I was going to say Dallas.
Dak Prescott.
There we go.
So he'll have conflicted loyalties with Russell Wilson.
We'll see which team Ben Baldwin's cheering for.
I think we know. he'll obviously be cheering for whatever decision the referees make because it was correct. That's why.
So a huge football weekend. This is the first time that we'll ever have a live podcast on a Friday night. And you know what to expect from Pelton Cast Live. We're going to be doing Talkin' Taco Time live with special guest TBD.
Oh, man.
There we go.
I love TBD.
And also, you know what else to expect from Pelton Cast Live. You should come
hungry.
Free food. There we go. Jan got it.
Are we guaranteeing that?
Of course.
Okay.
You don't think one of our many sponsors?
That's where I go.
I mean, it's a great deal, though. It's $10, and you're probably going to get at least part of your dinner paid for. That's
absolutely
part of the value proposition.
We've got to take... So the first year, we threw Dick's Burgers to the crowd. Last year, we had both our good friends from Lil Woody's Burgers and Taco Time, of course, there. This year, maybe we'll have some new friends at the live show. I would probably assume that there's going to be some Taco Time there if we're doing a live Taco Time. But just most importantly, come hungry to Pelton Cast Live.
And more special guests to be announced. TBD.
As we figure that out.
Announcing that.
and also, last year, the famous Cousin Katie put together Pelton Cast Bingo.
Yeah, we're going to try and make her do that again.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should also ask her to do a poster for the show.
Oh, there we go.
That's a good idea.
What else should we ask Katie to do?
T-shirts.
we'll think about that.
Chances, dude. Maybe photos of your face, Jan. Anyway, tickets will be on sale as you hear this. Kevin is going to tweet out the link from the Pelton Cast account.
Or if you go to the Pelton Cast website, they'll also be available there, of course.
Via eventbrite.com. Tickets will be available. They're $10. They are extremely limited. The Belltown Yacht Club is not meant to be a seated venue.
No.
And we are bringing seats in there. All right. Jan's very concerned by... Wait, it's not a theater. What?
All right,
you know, Barbosa normally doesn't have seats either, Jan.
I just want to go, but I don't know if I can come.
She doesn't know if she can get a ticket. That's how limited the capacity is.
All right, we do have a couple of other toasts to get to. First up to Sounders midfielder Nicola Ladero, who's been chosen for the MLS All-Star Game on July 31st in Orlando versus Atletico Madrid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he is the lone Sounders representative.
Dan, we're cheers into this.
In that game.
I don't know if I can drink anymore.
You're not drinking anymore
that
beer?
Not bad.
Wow.
Not bad.
Oh, my God.
All right, second off.
You know, Bud Light, you really nailed it on the blimes, right? Everybody knows. Nothing more refreshing in the summertime than a Bud Light lime.
Yeah, I can think of a few things that are more refreshing than a Bud Light lime.
I'm not sure about this Blemon tea. Not a situation.
May have gone too far.
And the Bud Light orange. I had to special order it at the end of last summer.
Oh, you had to special order it?
I did, because they didn't have it anymore in the store, so I had to special order it.
From whom?
BevMo.
Okay.
Okay, so the other thing we need to toast to is friend of the pod, Josh Cashman, a.k.a. Cable Thanos, getting a job working for Russell Wilson's company, which is called what? East Meets West? Is that what it's called?
Sure.
Something like that. I was unfamiliar with the name of this until I saw that he got hired by them. But congrats to him.
Huge.
Awesome. Well-deserved.
We're cheersing again. Do you want to try this hazy IPA, Jan? That was a no. Strong no. You already drank your Bud Light orange that you brought yourself here.
It's true.
I was thinking about this, and Cable Thanos being hired by Russell Wilson's company, I was just thinking about that he got famous with a name comparing former Seahawks offensive line coach, I think / associate head coach or something like that, Tom Cable, to a Marvel Comics character who wanted to eliminate half of the universe. Basically, aligning those two characters just hired by Russell Wilson, which is kind of amazing, right?
All right, the production, the branding agency is called West to East Empire.
West to East.
Backwards.
There we go.
It feels like the sun goes east to west. It feels like it maybe should be that. But
who was the player who did? Oh, Jared, that was Jared Goff, right?
Who didn't know which direction the sun set it?
The sun, wait, I'm going to try to get this right.
Oh, no.
It rises in the east and sets in the west.
Okay, some nailed podcast it. Geography. Can I say
something? You can say it actually into the microphone, too. Is this related to the
famous Pat Cashman? We believe
that. He is. You can actually say that on the microphone.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad thing. That was.
Is he related to the famous Pat Cashman?
There's a relationship.
That sounds right.
To Pat Cashman.
I guess we can ask him more about this because he will be at the...
there we go.
The Tasteful Profanity live podcast. So we'll chat about that, share our favorite Pat Cashman stories there.
And you can chat with Ben Baldwin about EPA at Peltoncast Live.
Exactly. What could be more exciting? All right, so we're on kind of a Boulevard Park theme this week.
Well, I want to talk about... We've got Jan here for a reason. We should get this out of the way first. You got Jan rolls her eyes. Wow. The people asked for it last week. I floated this. Everybody said, yes, this is what we want.
I mean, you knew the answer was going to be yes. It was not like I said on this podcast the answer was going to be yes. There was never any question. But the people wanted
so
mom's food tanks.
You and I are both going to Las Vegas coming up, right?
That is correct. Both in the month of July.
You're going there for work. I'm there going there for pleasure. And Jan recently went to Las Vegas, so I felt
she
like...
She often does. She goes much more frequently than we do.
Twice a year.
That's, I mean, I
one
go once
more
a
time
year.
Per year than either of us.
Yeah.
I actually went twice last summer. But so it felt like in preparation for that trip, we should hear some of Jan's food reviews so that we can know what eats to have in Las Vegas. You were walking this. You were walking through your meals that you had when you were there, and I really thought everybody should hear that.
Well, we stayed in the Mandalay Bay, where we don't usually stay in that end of town, so I don't know the restaurants there very well. So the first night, we checked out all the places at Mandalay Bay and finally decided to go to their buffet.
Okay.
And we looked at the brunch buffet, which was just about ending, and it looked pretty pathetic. Maybe like it had been sitting there a long time. So we decided to go in quite late to the brunch buffet so that we could stay for dinner, which was supposed to be international themed.
Okay.
And it was actually pretty good.
All right. Now, what's your favorite of the Vegas buffets you have tried?
I really, of course, mostly like the Mirage more than anything.
Really?
Have you done the Caesars buffet since they remodeled
it? I did do it for my retirement. I went to the Caesars, and all their ads talked about how they had steak grilled for you and all that. So I went over there. Cost $50. I said, "Where's the steak?" "Oh, well, we don't serve that anymore." So there you go.
I mean, I thought the prime rib there was quite good. I've gone. That's a Nate Duncan, Danny LaRue tradition to go there during summer league. I joined
them really?
One
the
year.
Caesars buffet.
Yeah.
I think they might have had lamb or lamb chops. I do like lamb chops
at the Caesars buffet.
Yeah.
So let's just. Coming back here, Jan went in late to the brunch buffet, which I'm guessing goes very late, right? You're talking like 3 o'clock or so?
Yeah, 3, probably 4. I don't know, something like that.
So what's the deal if you go late to the brunch buffet and then stay?
As long as you're in there, they don't clear the place out. So you just stay and you're there.
You get to try a little of both.
You get the dinner for the lunch price.
It is not quite a buffet of buffets, which we have done before.
It's been a while.
I don't know how I managed
that. What I'm saying here is Jan invented the sneak.
She did. That's true. That's a great point.
Right? Because you're getting the dinner buffet for the brunch price.
Yeah, we've been doing it a long time. we often go to the Mirage. We have to plan out our swim time so that we can get there in time to make it in before there. Because theirs ends at 3, so we have to make it there in time. And as I like the Mirage just because they have really a good assortment of foods. That you can eat all the guacamole you want, and they have very good guacamole.
Guacamole is not that... not that expensive of a thing to get.
It's good, though. And they also have shaved Parmesan cheese, which I like. Very few places have that.
On what?
So, like, you can, like, put it in your salad, or you can eat it on pretzel rolls,
another
pretzel breadsticks.
Not consuming at a buffet.
I know. I literally all I care about is the carving station.
A lot of meat.
The main thing I eat at Mirage now is fish and chips. And I don't even really like fish and chips, but... The Mirage fish and chips, I love. That was probably the most thing I ate when I was there.
Okay.
And then the other thing I really like is that, you know, you get beer and wine included.
Oh, course, every time at the Mirage?
Of course, it's cheap beer and wine. But, yeah, that's included.
Light lime.
Blood and tea.
Anyway, so the first thing you can do is go to the bar and find out if they have any beers left over that they have in this special case. And then you can have one of those.
Like fancier beers?
Yes. So we had like cider. We had a cider that was very good.
What was it?
Something called Strong something.
Strongbow, yes.
It was really good. But unfortunately, there were only two, so.
All right, what else did you try on this trip?
Okay, I just want to tell you one more thing because I
love it. I just
loved this part. My favorite part is that the bartender knows who I am. He doesn't know my name, but when I walk in, he goes, "Hi, nice to see you again." And he's not just joking that he says this to everybody. He really... does recognize me.
So you're a regular at the Mirage buffet.
Yeah. And he's always there. So,
I
kind of had to laugh about that because I thought this would just drive Kevin absolutely nuts that I know the bartender.
Why? Why do you?
Because you're not supposed to speak to strangers, you know.
Oh, in Kevin parlance?
Yeah.
Not a big fan of it.
And so then I went back a little bit later and I asked him to mix me a glass of Cabernet with White Zinfandel.
Uh-huh, a blend.
And he
yes.
goes, "Oh, yeah, now I really remember you." Because I guess I'm the only person who does that. And one time, in fact, he made a mistake and he put beer with my wine.
Did you drink it?
I guess I confused him too much. Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't that much beer.
Perhaps another sneak in being invented there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's the other thing. You can also ask for a drink to go. And they'll put it in a plastic cup and you can take it with you.
Really? I'm staying at the Mirage, and I'm learning things.
So, like, when we go to the Mirage, we eat there every day. This day, we had to walk there, and it was 105.
Because you wouldn't take any sort of Uber or Lyft or anything?
No, we took some trams in between the buildings.
Okay, but you mostly walked outside 105-degree weather.
We did get the Lyft app downloaded for her on her phone
so that
she could go to the airport.
We did take the Lyft back to the airport.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned to me you had two expensive days of eating and two cheap days of eating while you were there, right?
That's right.
And which were the expensive days of eating?
the Mandalay Bay and the Mirage.
The buffets. Yes. Okay. So what did you have in the cheap days of eating in Vegas?
Well, then I kept watching those commercials during the finals, and they kept having those Taco Bell nacho commercials, and I just kept thinking about I wanted those nachos.
They do look really good, the Taco Bell nachos in those commercials.
And so I thought, well, I think that Taco Bell is close down in this end of town, so we just started walking. And then
it's 105 degrees. I also don't think it's that close to where you're staying. The Taco Bell
Cantina.
I don't
think it was 105 on that day. It was only about 100.
You went to the Taco Bell Cantina, correct?
Yes.
This is the fancy taco. Wow. Well, I take all of this mocking back.
No, wait, we didn't go in the fancy part.
Oh.
I didn't even know. That was upstairs, I think. We didn't go there.
But that's on the cross street that's across from, from Vidar and Aria and Cosmopolitan, isn't it?
It's at the edge of Planet Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty healthy walk.
Well, that's why as we're going along now, we're getting kind of hungry. You know, we hadn't eaten anything really hardly, you know. And so where I thought the Taco Bell was, instead there was Del Taco. So I said, oh, let's just stop here and we'll just have a snack at Del Taco. So
Del Taco to tide you over.
we had a burrito or something, you know. And then also in that same restaurant area, they had a Popeyes. And I love Popeye's chicken, so I got a chicken breast at Popeye's. So now we're probably up to about $5. Then we just kept going down, and finally, eventually, we made it to the actual Taco Bell that you're talking about. And then we finally did have the nachos, which we just shared a box because really...
At that point,
you'd already Taco Bell.
We'd already... we were having a moving feast, you know.
Oh my God. Did Colleen eat at these places also?
Yeah, but she didn't have the chicken breast, no. She had two of the burritos, I think, at Del Taco.
Oh, nice.
But anyway, that was our moving feast that day. And actually, it was okay. It wasn't fabulous, but it was okay. I kept wanting to have...
So your cheap day cost like $7 in food?
It was really pretty close to that, yes. Yeah. And then I don't know if that was the day we found the $2 beers at the, where did I tell you that place was called?
You said it was the former Bill's, right?
Yeah.
Which is now
It's not called
fancier.
Dre's. That's the nightclub.
It is
that place, though, that has Dre's nightclub. Anyway, so they were advertising $2 drinks.
Link.
And we went in there.
Not the Link.
The street?
No, the Link is right next door. The Link is the former,
I talked to this lady that was in line, and she was having a good time, and she was drinking straight shots of peach vodka.
Oh, God.
But I didn't think I would like that. But he did make us a really good drink. He made us a Sex on the Beach, and it was very good. And so good we had two. And
the Cromwell.
I should have taken another one to go.
You had two Sex on the Beaches.
Mm-hmm.
For $2.
$2 each, yeah.
Okay.
Which is cheaper than it costs you than gambling. Usually every drink costs you quite a bit of money when you're gambling.
Really?
Well, because you lose the money from the gambling. That's why it costs you a lot of money.
Well, they're gone for so long getting this damn drink, then
okay,
you're losing.
What was your other cheap day?
Okay, so then on the final day, I decided that we should go to the famous Shake Shack.
Oh, my God.
Because I thought, if I go in Las Vegas, I don't have to drive to Lake Union...
It
find parking.
To fly to Las Vegas.
I mean, I haven't been to Shake Shack in Seattle either. And I will go in Vegas.
You know, there's not much of a line. I think there was like maybe
I'll go to any
seven people in line.
Like Union.
And so I thought, now I'm going to just go try it. So I ordered just their basic burger.
What is okay? I want to finish what you had to say, but I want to really dissect what you ordered.
The Shack burger.
You ordered a Shack burger, right? A single Shack burger.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'd say it was probably the most disappointing thing ever.
The most disappointing thing ever.
In the first place, I like not very much meat on my hamburgers. I like a really thin patty. This patty was so small, it was practically non-existent.
I don't feel like that's ever been an issue when I've gone to Shake Shack.
I'm not joking you. It was so tiny. It was tinier than like if you got a cheeseburger at McDonald's.
Okay.
So your Shack burger, you think, was smaller than a McDonald's just cheeseburger?
Yes, it was.
A smaller burger on the menu? Are you checking this out?
I really want to figure out what you ordered. It looked like that right there?
The listener can't see that.
This is like a cheeseburger.
It was very much smaller than looking than that. But
this
that's what it was.
Fucking delicious to me.
It was not. So and then the girl didn't even tell me I could have onions on it and... pickles. All I got on it was tomatoes and lettuce.
You got a shack burger.
Let's not forget the special sauce. The amount of special sauce that was on it was the size of a quarter.
I don't know. I've never had this issue.
This I had to pay, what, $7 for or something? My God. It was ridiculous. Okay, let's talk about...
She
could have eaten at Taco Bell, Del Taco, and Popeyes for that amount.
Let's go on to the dessert. Okay.
Oh, my God.
So I decided, well, I'm going to order one of their special custard ice creams, and they had a sundae that came with caramel sauce, it said dark chocolate candy bits in there. Okay, this thing. The candy was so horrifically terrible. I did eat most of it, but I left several pieces of candy.
You got a shack attack, chocolate custard fudge sauce, chocolate truffle cookie dough, and Mass Brothers Shake Shack dark chocolate chunks topped with chocolate sprinkles.
That sounds pretty good to me. I got to be honest.
Also, why didn't you get a shake?
It didn't seem like that. Anyway, I'm telling you that whatever this candy was they put in there was so bad that I left it in the cup. And if you know, I'm not ever leaving any dessert in the cup. But this candy went in the garbage.
Oh, my God.
So this has been Walt's review of Shake Shack?
I'm very happy that I never have to go to Shake Shack ever again.
She's excited that it was so bad that she never has to go get it.
I don't have to go down to Lake Union.
Oh, boy. Well, it's shorter line for the rest of us, I suppose.
I just can't believe that this is your perspective. I was saying...
No, I can't believe that this
is your perspective. I was saying to Kevin that, to me, flavor-wise, the Shake Shack burger is probably the best, like, tasting burger of any burger I've ever had.
Agreed.
To me, it tastes kind of almost raw.
Just the combination of the burger and the bun and everything with it too. It's like kind of like moist, right? The whole thing. It's like, why are you so anti-moist? I'm anti people being anti-moist.
It's an unpleasant word.
It's rich. I mean, what I would get is I would get a double shack burger. So it's not that different than what you would get.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe I'm sure they would give you a cup of shack sauce on the side.
They also got the fries without cheese sauce, which is a shame.
You need the cheese. Oh, you got fries with no cheese sauce?
Colleen did. Colleen hates cheese.
Colleen hates cheese?
She doesn't ever eat cheese.
Really?
No.
That's a take.
Even still, crinkle fries are the number one fry.
They're not the number one fry, but the shake.
That doesn't come through on a podcast. No. Jan winced and shook her head. To Kringle fries being the number one fry. What's the number one fry then?
Well, to me, it would be a sweet potato fry.
Fry is the number one fry.
Oh, you people. Kringle fries and the number one. Sweet potato fries aren't even fries.
Kringle fries are like something really old.
Kringle fries are 60s. Excellent.
Fries are not generally very good, but again, Shake Shack does them quite well.
Kringle fries are not generally very good.
They're mostly done in the oven, as far as I can tell.
Wow.
I have to say, I'm also not a fan of Chick-fil-A.
You're not a fan of Chick-fil-A?
And I can't even understand how those people line up for it.
Didn't you go to Chick-fil-A like a bunch of times after it opened?
I went there twice because I had 2 free cards to eat free.
And you didn't go back after that? Wow. I mean, I don't want to be a fan of Chick-fil-A, but goddamn, that's some good chicken.
Well,
good
okay, chicken. The time I went with Kevin and I had what would be like what McDonald's serves as the ultimate chicken sandwich, that was good. But I had their grilled chicken sandwich.
Don't get grilled chicken at Chick-fil-A.
No one is suggesting going to... I mean, look, if you want to be healthy, don't go to Chick-fil-A.
I like grilled chicken sandwiches, though. McDonald's makes them very good.
Go to McDonald's, then. If you like McDonald's grilled chicken sandwich, go to McDonald's.
Don't go to
Chick-fil-A also is like the juiciest chicken I've basically ever had in my entire life.
Oh, yeah. They've perfected cooking chicken.
And then I had some kind of breakfast sandwich. I don't know what it was, but it also was not very exciting.
All right. Do we have any other Vegas food reviews?
That's all that I ate in Vegas. I did tell you that I went to the Cosmo and I looked at every restaurant in there. And if Kevin had told me that I should have eaten at that milk bar, I would have gotten...
Oh, I didn't think of that because I was just thinking of what was in the food court. That is my mistake. I will take ownership of that one.
Well, because so you walk through, they have a brand new food court type area, right? I've not seen this yet. It hasn't been open since I've been to
Vegas.
There's
a lot of stuff there. They have that, what, slut eggs?
Slut eggs is a very different place. Egg slut.
That's the same thing to me.
That has been open there for a long time.
Egg slut's around the corner from what I'm talking about.
I mean, I don't know,
but they're
for
very
sure
close
geographically, but yes.
But there's like a food court type area that has Pock Pock in it, right?
It has a lot of restaurants.
And Lardo.
Yeah. Oh, Lardo, that's right. I figured that was the one where you're supposed to eat as much fat as you can and try to kill yourself. Is that right? I've heard there's one like that.
Exactly.
I would not really describe Lardo that way.
No. I mean, I wouldn't describe
that's,
it as health
I,
food.
I frankly thought that's what it meant.
It's probably not any worse for you than slut eggs.
Slut egg.
I feel like we should start that as a knockoff egg slut.
So you decided to go to none of those restaurants and instead decided to go to Del Taco and Popeyes?
Oh, we had already eaten, so we weren't that hungry, you know, no anymore. Time. So by that time.
What do you think a meal at Momofuku would cost on average? If you could just guess, because your expensive day was going to...
I looked at the menu, but I can't really remember. I don't know. Was it about 20-some? What? No?
What?
I thought
20-some for what?
I thought I looked at the menu. I don't know.
So this is like, for the listener, is context. When Jerry Seinfeld had to pretend that he got the watch hot or something for his dad, when he was giving the gift to Morty Seinfeld, that's if we describe a dinner we have in Las Vegas to mom. We cannot quote the full price. It just can't be done.
Oh, my God.
But I am going back to Las Vegas in August, and I am going to go to the milk bar.
There we go.
Okay.
That's all that really matters.
Well, we'll have to bring you back on for your milk bar review.
Although I don't know if Larie can eat there, but we'll see.
It's not very chocolatey, right?
She can get something without chocolate.
Well, okay. the truffle balls, right?
Yeah.
Are not. There's no chocolate in them.
I mean, I don't know if there's any contamination with chocolate with any of these things, but yeah, I mean,
she doesn't seem to care.
She does, yeah.
About contamination?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not super, but she does. I know there was some place we went recently that she was upset she couldn't eat anything, but I can't remember why. But there was something.
Well, clearly that.
I mean,
it was
ice cream. You know.
Clearly that was not you in Las Vegas who couldn't eat anything because you had tons of good options. You told me after we came back that you really wanted to go to Dairy Queen.
Oh, I kept wanting to go to Dairy Queen, yeah. It was very hot.
Surely a much better dessert option than right. Shake Shack.
All right. Kevin is like playing us off over here. Like, oh, this is the freaking
Oscars. I did tell Kevin that I wanted to tell you that the reason I've never been really very excited about any going out and eating anything, really. I mean, nothing. There's very few things that have ever really been that spectacular to me. Uh-huh. And that's because I was thinking about this the other night that, it's because my mother was such a fantastic cook that really it'd be very hard to compete with that.
I feel like I would say that I'm probably less into pasta for that reason. Like, it's just never going to approach the sense of homemade ravioli, even if the actual quality is probably higher, or perhaps higher. Not to...
You never get as good flavor as our ravioli.
But it's just...
Never.
It's just never going to compare to that experience. So I feel like pasta is relatively lower for me because of the fact that I grew up eating a lot of Italian food.
And see, she probably didn't make a lot of the stuff. You know, she was quite a bit older when you guys came along, so she probably didn't make, like when I was young, we could choose whatever we wanted for our birthday to have. And I always chose veal scallopini. And it was really fabulous.
I don't know if I would have ever eaten veal scallopini.
I feel like I might have eaten it once as a kid, but it definitely was not a regular occurrence by that point, no.
So that was really something else. And I still feel that, like, if Mom had really wanted to open her own restaurant, she could have had one of those places where you had to come and just put down your money and eat whatever the chef made for you, and probably could have made a truckload of money, but they were kind of not in the right time period.
Well, I'm sure there were a lot of people like that.
And the other thing I want to say is that my friends used to come to
just
dinner.
Takes off. This is her one chance.
For several nights. They would come down when we were having dinner, and there'd be my grandfather and my brother and me and my parents. And for sure, my neighbor Regine came down every night. She would have dinner with her mother and father, and then she would come to our house.
Second dinner.
And the reason she came was not to eat. She came for the conversation. Because she said we always had lively discussions at our table.
Wow. I mean, what were they but unrecorded podcasts?
I know. I wish I knew what they were. I can't really remember, but I guess I just took it for granted. And my other friend, Diane, says that they also would come for dinner just because, I mean, they came for the food also, but they came because of the lively conversations. Nobody had a family like ours.
I guess that remains true.
Well, that's probably true.
And somehow all of this amounted to you. This is an explanation for why you ate at Del Taco and Popeyes in Las Vegas.
I'm just saying I haven't gone to very many places and eaten that really impressed me.
So you might as well eat at Del Taco.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, man. We're glad really we could get you up.
That was really some conclusion to that. I mean, I feel like the description of what we would want to do on this podcast, not to step out of this, but is supposed to be like if we're sitting around Grandma and Grandpa's kitchen table and eating cheese, cutting like slices of cheese off and eating salami and drinking and sitting there talking about sports and yelling about things. That's what this podcast is supposed to be.
Except with a lot more stats.
Except with a rundown on what the Sounders did this last week.
And no cheese.
Sadly, no. Yeah, we have not got the charcuterie game. It's not as strong on this podcast as in the Blazers media room during the postseason.
But it is interesting that you would bring that up as sort of like what the goal is of what we're trying to do. And failing, mostly.
So if we transition to our search for Seattle's best sandwich, I'm curious, have you ever been to this location? Because it's in Boulevard Park, Washington, near where we grew up.
No, I've never been there.
Semitas Poblanas.
You don't have to stick around, Jan. You can if you want to, but you don't have to.
Okay. Do you think I would like it?
No, probably not.
God, I've got some takes about Semitas Poblanas.
Do you?
Well, number one, it felt good to be back in Boulevard Park, by the way.
Well, at least no one's been shot there.
It's a good thing you put the microphone down. At all times, every time I'm in Boulevard Park, I'm just like, damn, it feels good to be back.
You can't keep talking once you're off the microphone.
Nobody can hear that. That was kind of
distracting for people who are trying to listen to the podcast.
That was a pretty good guest appearance by Jan.
I assume that the listener will be clamoring for more Jan.
It was better than I was anticipating.
Okay, so
it felt good to be back in Boulevard Park is what I'm trying to say.
So this is like, you know, 5 minutes from where we grew up, basically.
More or less.
It is two doors down from the place where I get my hair cut still.
Wait, where do you get your hair cut? At the gas station?
Yeah, the gas station.
It shows.
Wow.
No, literally, where do you get your hair cut? There's not a place.
It's between the gas station and there.
At the Duane's Pea Patch? There's no place to get your hair.
There's a teriyaki restaurant. There's the gas station. And in between is a hair salon.
No, there's not.
Yes, it is.
There cannot
100%
be.
100% there is.
I did not realize that's right. I'll cut your hair. Don't worry.
Oh, great.
I cut my own hair. We're good.
Anyways.
I cannot give you Mexican sandwiches,
though. This place has been open for over a decade. The Seattle Times wrote a story about it in 2009 that I went and looked up.
I remember roughly when it opened.
The Semita Poblana is a sandwich native to the Puebla region of Mexico. Also a name for the bread, which is a roll covered with sesame seeds. And one of perhaps the more distinctive things about this is a sandwich. The rolls that they are serving this sandwich on at Semitas Poblanas are enormous.
Yeah, I should have been warned about this.
I had kind of forgotten. It's been a while since I've been there. At last summer at the most recent. And that is a serious meal, as it turns out.
It was kind of shocking how big the sandwich was.
I mean, if you're, you know, like comparing it to going to a taco truck, for example, it's much more expensive. These sandwiches run, I think, like
$11.
$11 with tax. But you're getting your money's worth. And so traditionally, the Semita Poblana features avocado and queso blanco, Mexican cheese.
Which was really, it's sort of like a thick slice of like, oh, it's almost like sliced mozzarella.
Yes.
In a way. It's an interesting cheese, and I was surprised to see it on the sandwich.
I mean, and the quantity of cheese and avocado that you're getting on this sandwich is substantial.
You're looking like, at the Shake Shack menu, just being angry at it. I'm so excited to go here in like 3 weeks.
Oh, man.
Not that they have them in Seattle or anything.
Like, even if you get a bite where there's not any meat on the sandwich, it's still a delicious bite solely because of the avocado and the queso.
It's a lot of avocado.
Oh, you said that almost in a negative way. It's a lot of avocado.
I'm telling you, I have some hot takes, but...
I'm not ready for your takes, so...
You heard Jan's Shake Shack takes. You're ready for anything.
I don't know if I've been going to this place for a decade, but I've been going for a number of years on a regular basis.
It's weird that I've never been there.
As much as I talked, I think at one point on the podcast, about how the former Hitchcock Deli, which is now no longer open in Georgetown, was kind of my, quote, neighborhood sandwich place. This is obviously the one that is much closer to me. It's just I don't go there as frequently because it's not really a great lunch sandwich
the
stop.
The Subway in South Park is your neighborhood sandwich place?
I mean... It's a nice light lunch that, you know, I can eat reasonably healthy. That's the reason for that. But, okay, so this is your first time. What did you get?
I got the carne asada.
Also, we should, by the way, set the environment that the customers are primarily Spanish-speaking, I would say. Mexican immigrants.
I mean, it's like a corner taco place, right? That happens to serve sandwiches.
Yeah.
I would say. Like, they also serve, like, plates, burritos, things like that.
I've never gotten any of those and never will. I'm not venturing away from the semita.
And never will. But it's not like they don't only serve semitas.
No, that is true.
And like, it's very much of the neighborhood. So I got the carne asada semita, and I was looking around the options. There are a couple of different like beef options. There's pork. There's the carne asada. There's chicken.
I don't know if I've ever gotten the carne asada there for whatever reason.
So it's that like thin sliced like Mexican steak, right? Yeah. Which is like I really like, especially in tacos. If you can get that and it's flavored right, like it's almost like it's like stringy but good. You know, I like everything about it. So that's what I went with.
I've often gotten the milanesa, which is the...
Do you do the jalapeno or the chipotle sauce?
Wait, chipotle sauce?
They offered me jalapenos or chipotle sauce.
See, I've always answered no to the jalapeno. I don't think I ever got to the chipotle
sauce. You don't get either? They're like, do you want the jalapeno or chipotle? And you just say no. And they're like, we see you. We know you just got your hair cut over here. Oh. We get the deal. And I was like, give me the hottest possible thing.
I just didn't know that chipotle sauce was even an option for me. I mean, not that I got the spicy pork. It didn't really need a sauce because of the fact that, you know, it was coated in the spicy sauce.
Jan's just over here glaring at us now. Not on the podcast, just glaring at us.
It's, you know, it recreates our normal family get-togethers.
I told her about John Morant's My Dad Was My First Hater thing, and she took it very personally. I didn't have to say anything, but she took it very personally.
Okay, so you disliked this?
It was kind of bad.
I'm stunned by this take.
I wanted to like it so desperately, right? I wanted like the best sandwich in Seattle to be this like corner store, like Mexican sandwich place. I really wanted it to be the case, but just something about kind of the sum of the parts was worse than maybe each individual part on its own.
Cannot endorse this take whatsoever.
It just didn't taste good. Like, that really is the problem. Like, from a taste buds perspective, it didn't taste good. And it was not an enjoyable experience to eat.
Wow. I am stunned by
this. This was, and I don't want to be saying this. I'm just trying to be honest here, right? I've really trying to, like, assess food honestly when we do these searches. And this was easily the worst sandwich we've had in our search for Seattle's best sandwich.
First off, I don't think I necessarily agree with that conclusion.
What do you think is the worst?
I mean, I don't...
If you say Honey Hole, I'm going to murder you.
Actually, Honey Hole might be the second lowest I have there. I thought Farolet was the weakest of the sandwiches we've had so far.
Wow, Farolet?
Yeah.
I mean, like... 100 times out of 100, I'm having fun.
I guess we all hate local places since that got its start in South Park just down the street. But I just don't understand what you're not liking about this. Everything about it is good. The bun is good. The avocado, the quantity of avocado is delicious.
I really don't know what to tell you. But like,
carne asada was wrong.
About that. The meat was good. Jan's coming over. She's about to jump in here. She heard that John Morant comment and had to get in the mix. Oh, hello.
Because they are fabulous.
There we go.
I don't know. I think Kevin ordered the wrong thing. I don't know what he ordered.
He had a hot dog.
I've been to there many times. I've ordered multiple different things. That was not the issue.
I mean, that specialty sandwich is so good.
You're just wrong about sandwiches. John Morant's dad was his first hater. Jan was our first hater. And you are for all his first haters,
sir. I just don't want to hear this anymore about this hater business.
But
should we tell the story about Mom Betty that you wouldn't get into UW?
I don't think we're going to tell that story.
I think I told her, who am I telling this to? It's not like I'm saying it on a podcast.
Yeah, now you want him to say it to everybody.
We should tell the story about where she predicted that you would work, though, as a sports writer.
I'm still not even sure which.
I tried to explain this to Tristan the other day, that here you have someone who's a fabulous mathematician.
She explained the hate. She explained what hating is.
And then he says to me one day, I want to be a writer. And I said, oh my God, you're going to be working in some podunk town like Moses Lake or Sunnyside.
Lovely places.
This is nothing personal against Moses Lake or Sunnyside. Beautiful places.
I just figured, well, it's not that easy, really, to be a writer. I mean, a lot of people want to be a writer.
Yeah, that's why you're a hater. You're telling him that his goals cannot be achieved. That is the definition of a hater. How do you not see this?
I don't think that's ever true, no.
I thought it was that you'd be writing for the
I wasn't expecting this when he says he wants to be a writer, that he's going to be working for ESPN. I really didn't.
Look, we're all shocked.
Didn't foresee that.
I love that Jan needed
many people who click on my stories these days still are shocked that I'm working for ESPN. If I'm the Twitter content.
Lakers fans mostly.
Oh my God.
Let's not forget who got him started going to the Sonics.
The famous cousin Katie?
Me. I'm saying when you started going to Sonics games, it was with me.
Yes, yeah, yes. You could have been writing exposés about hydroplanes. If it weren't for Jan, you'd be a freaking airplane writer right now.
He'd be working for the airlines.
And there's some stories being written there. There's a lot of coverage there. So there's some good work to be done in the aerospace industry.
What is the ESPN of aviation?
And really, the reason we went to the Sonics was mostly Kevin Calabro and Sean Kemp and Gary Payton.
All right, we don't have time to take this podcast just a trip down memory lane about our entire lives.
Look, we got Jan here.
We're already 45 minutes in.
Do you ever think, did you know that on the draft broadcast, Al was called a genius of stats? Are you aware of this?
Of the numbers.
The recent one? The one that just happened?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, that happened.
That doesn't really surprise me, but it doesn't seem like...
I mean, I think it might surprise you because you did predict that he'd be working in a Moses-like newspaper.
Well, I didn't see that as being a writer would be a statistician.
This is great content. Are you joking? It's 11:30. We don't need to talk about the Sounders.
But anyway, but if that's so, why don't they put you on the podcast more?
Okay, that's coming out. That's being deleted. She dropped the mic after that. Jan literally dropped the mic after that.
I was on the podcast today. There's a great many writers that we have at ESPN, so... You know,
I would say that he's on the podcast. I just love the podcast.
Yeah,
too much.
Another one.
Who called you a master statistician?
Mike Schmitz, my colleague who specializes in the draft.
So I mean, just
very,
like...
It was a very generous comment.
How surreal is it that Kevin Pelton is being talked about on the NBA draft broadcast, not just like casually mentioned or whatever, being called a genius of the numbers? That's what it was? Look, you have the clip saved. Just drop it in here.
Yeah, I wish I had heard it.
He'll drop it in the podcast. You can listen.
I don't think the audio is good enough to be on the podcast. I don't know. We'll see.
But like that's
also,
a pretty surreal
11:30
thing.
And I'm not going to have time to edit this podcast because we keep talking about stuff.
All right, Jan's leaving. Anyway, I'm saying there were bites. Switching it back to sandwiches, there were bites that were just like all avocado, and it's like I love avocado, but like avocado is not an item that exists on its own. A bite of just avocado, it's not guacamole. It's not avocado with salt and pepper on it. It's just avocado. Like I can go get a goddamn avocado and eat it.
I would eat this sandwich if it were just avocado and queso blanco. I would be perfectly satisfied.
Do I love queso blanco? Of course I do. But it's just not enough.
What is for me?
Okay. This was I've toyed with giving Mrs. Fantasy Genius. What I did is she's doing a low-carb diet, so I had like half of it left over. Because again, this is an enormous sandwich. When I got home, I took the buns off and put everything else in a bowl with the chipotle sauce, because I got a side of chipotle sauce. Not only did I get it on the sandwich, I asked for a side of it, of this thing that you've been going to for 10 years and are unaware of that it exists. Jan's over here. She just turned on the Tonight Show. You wouldn't know great content if it hit you in the face. Anyway. I'm just saying, like, Mrs. Fantasy Genius loved it. And, like, so maybe this is just a problem with me.
Yeah, like, that does sound like just a problem with you. Then.
To me, just, like, the whole thing, I want it to be so good. Maybe it was expectations. I don't know. But altogether, it just didn't work. The whole package didn't work. I'm not a fan of smoke flavor also. I love spice, but I don't love smoke. And the chipotle sauce is very smoky.
Well, maybe I had it right all these years not getting the chipotle sauce then.
I wanted as much spice as possible, but I guess I don't know if these are two like sides of the continuum, but I definitely skew creamy, right? And maybe that's why Farale works for me, because it's a much creamier sauce, but still some spice. But okay. I gave it a 70.
I'll give you an 85.
I will never have this sandwich ever again in my entire life.
Your loss. You will have that and we'll have Shake Shack. So everybody's not having something. All right.
I'll see you in Vegas, though, for Shake Shack. Right? We're going there.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm necessarily going with you, but okay.
You're going with Nate and Danny.
Let's talk about the NHL Seattle group. The NHL Seattle principal team owner Jerry Bruckheimer and CEO Todd Leiwicki attended the NHL draft in Vancouver last weekend to interview candidates for the team's vacant GM job. The Seattle Times reported that, while they obviously have not hired a GM yet, NHL Seattle has hired Alexandra Mandricki, who has a background in statistical analysis, is the team's director of hockey operations. She spent the previous three seasons with the Minnesota Wild as a hockey operations analyst and previously co-founded the hockey stats site waronice.com. Leiwicki's comment about this, analytics isn't just a department for us, it's a way of life. It feels like that's a motivational quote. It's not just a department for us, it's a way of life. The world is changing. It's an informed approach, and Alex will play a part in our GM decision. We're feeling good about having fresh eyes on this.
Ah, damn you, NHL to Seattle, for making smart decisions.
Yeah, continually making.
Can you imagine if like there was a basketball team coming back to Seattle and they said something like this?
They might. I mean, the field has changed. The appreciation of statistical analysis in basketball has changed pretty substantially in the 11 years since we've had a team. And the Sonics were
radio hosts in Seattle.
Well,
morning radio hosts in Seattle about this. Don't read them this quote because they'll say it has gone too far, sir.
Well, there you go. All right. Speaking of the Sounders,
we're not talking about basketball at all.
We'll talk about it at the end.
Okay.
They are off the international break on Saturday. We'll host the Vancouver Whitecaps in their first home match in, I think, like 6 weeks. It's been a long period of time since they last played at CenturyLink Field. The bad news, of course, the Sounders confirmed that it was an ACL tear for forward Will Bruin in practice last week, as we suspected at the time we last potted and when Tristan declared that the entire front office and coaching staff was subsequently going to get fired as a result of this.
When it happens, you hear first. Oh, no.
The Sounders will, without Bruin, be very shorthanded this weekend against Vancouver. They will be without their other two forwards, Jordan Morris and Raul Ruidíaz. midfielders, the aforementioned Nicolas Ladero, Christian Roldan, and then also defender Roman Torres. Wither defender Javier Arriaga will be back. Depends on whether his Ecuador side advances in Copa America. Gustav Svensson and Brad Smith, who were only playing in qualifiers, not in tournaments, already back with the team. And Jordi Delem and Jovan Jones both saw their teams eliminated in the group stage of the Gold Cup.
Phew.
Jovan Jones does still have one game to play for Trinidad and Tobago on Wednesday. So whether he plays or how much will depend whether he might be available this weekend. The Whitecaps will be without four of their Canadian players as Canada has advanced to the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup. Great month for sports in Canada.
Is that Gold Cup taking place in Canada?
No, it's taking place in the U.S.
Oh, they're just crushing it?
Yeah.
Oh, go Canada.
Yeah, good for them. Jordan Morris, notably with a pair of assists for the USMNT in their 6-0 domination.
What he did to Jovan Jones.
Of Trinidad and Tobago on Saturday night. Including one of the three goals that was scored when I went to go take a shower. And in that 10-minute span, it went from 1-0 to 4-0 USMNT. I heard, as I was getting out, the goal celebration. I was like, oh, they finally got that second. Hey, good for them.
It was actually and then I walked in and sat down,
and it was 4-0. I was like, Man, wow. This escalated quickly. Rain FC, Jess Fishlock with the lone goal is the Rain 1 in Chicago on Sunday. The Rain now up to fourth in the NWSL standings with 14 points, 11 of those coming in the last five matches after just 3 points from their first four matches.
Are we going to talk USWNT at all?
Sure.
I mean, Megan Rapinoe with two goals in the elimination match versus Spain, both of them coming on penalty kicks.
I mean, the both goals. The two goals the USWNT needed. Yeah.
I mean, pretty huge.
It was kind of fascinating, that second penalty where Alex Morgan initially went up to take it. Then there was VAR. And subsequent to that, Rapinoe ended up taking it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, what was the VAR for? For the penalty to see if it occurred? Because
it was a really dubious penalty. It was very light. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, yes, it was a foul if it was committed outside the box. And since it was a foul, you should call it a foul inside the box, and therefore it's a penalty. But it's like such a lame way to concede.
Who was the player that they weren't playing? This is like me as a novice USWNT fan. Is it Carly Lloyd who they weren't playing? Because everybody was complaining how they weren't playing their best player.
How she was on it because she was on a yellow?
Yeah, they were nervous about her being on a yellow or whatever. Was that Carly Lloyd?
I got to admit, I wasn't paying close attention to the lineups in this match because I missed, I think, the start of... I missed the start because I was doing a podcast.
Do you not follow Bill Barnwell?
I
think it's probably at Bill Barnwell if you're wondering.
I was going to the actual ESPN soccer page.
No, I'm just joking for you to follow him.
Okay, thanks. I'll get on that immediately. Lloyd did come on as a substitute for Morgan at one point.
Would Carly Lloyd be somebody who would be considered generally as like the best player on the team?
I mean, how good Carly Lloyd is a subject of some debate. She's kind of like in the NWSL has been sort of washed. Like, wow. Was not good last season. Has played better, I think, so far this season. But she just keeps scoring goals when she plays for the national team.
That seems good.
So, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you there.
Well, from watching this match, what I saw this match, it is going to be stiff competition against France on Friday.
Yeah, that is a crucial semifinal. Could be the real final in many ways.
I mean, I would say, if we're doing percentage chances of victory, the U.S. has to feel like around 30% or so.
That seems unnecessarily conservative.
I mean, we're talking about a team who France is probably better. You look at the recent history, it seems like France has won all of the recent matches.
I mean, 538 Soccer Power Index still has the USA is comfortably the better team. And
really?
As it has them is a favorite in this match, despite the benefit of home field for France.
Wow.
54-46.
I'm surprised by that. So I was thinking that they're relatively equal teams, and then France is getting the home field plus the recent history.
I mean, a single elimination, a lot can happen, but a 51% chance one of these two teams wins the final, according to 538.
Okay.
Yeah. So definitely one to watch.
What time? That game's at 11 on Friday?
I think coverage starts at 11 and the actual match is at noon.
All right. I'm going to watch that.
Don't quote me on that. The Seattle Storm, including with Sue Bird on the sidelines, rocking a Megan Rapinoe jersey on Superhero Night on Friday at the Angel of the Winds Arena in Everett. In their last game in Everett for a while, got an 84-62 dominant win over the Los Angeles Sparks, the struggling LA Sparks, who saw Candace Parker in her second game back from a hamstring injury, really have a tough time offensively. The Storm was on fire from three-point range, tied the second most threes in franchise history in that win. And then on Sunday, ground out a 65-61 win over the Indiana Fever, getting the winning basket from Jewel Lloyd inside the final 30 seconds, and then coming up with a defensive stand to make that stand up. The Storm now 7-4 on the season, and really continuing to play well despite the injury to Jordan Canada, who missed both of those games with a bone bruise in her left knee. She's missed three in a row now, but they target her returning on Tuesday at Las Vegas in another showdown for the Storm. She is listed as probable for that game.
So this was a pair of weekend wins without Jordan Canada.
Yep.
Like, who's even playing for this team right now?
I mean, Natasha Howard has been as valuable as just about anyone in the league. Jonquil Jones of Connecticut's probably the MVP so far, but I think Natasha Howard's a strong number two. Jewel Lloyd had a really good weekend, scored over 20 points in both games, tied her career high in threes on Friday night. They got, you know, they've just gotten contributions from a number of players. Shavante Zellis, who's been starting at point in Canada's absence, had a really strong game on Sunday, played a crucial role in the fourth quarter. So things are going well. And then also the Storm got their head coach back last weekend. We talked about on the podcast last week that Dan Hughes was likely to be cleared to coach again after undergoing surgery following his cancer diagnosis. And he was back. And it really felt like, even with Jordan Canada missing, like the whole squad, that they're going to have the bulk of this season with Sue Bird not due back anytime soon and Brianna Stewart out for the year. But it's amazing how well this team is playing without those two players.
It is incredible what they've done.
Hughes also named an assistant coach for the 2020 U.S. Women's Olympic team, having served in that role for last year's Women's World Cup win. The Storm, after the playing at Vegas on Tuesday, returns home for a six-game homestand.
What? I was just thinking of something about Jan and Del Taco.
Storm players will probably not be going to Del Taco. Friday they host Chicago. Sunday they host Phoenix, which probably will still be without Diana Taurasi. This is, you know, generally before her projected return date from back surgery in the off season. Although there has been some talk of her being out of schedule, and the Mercury also struggling a bit, just like LA has. And it's the Storm that's been kind of able to take advantage.
All right.
Really nothing new, I think, on the Seahawks this week.
Except that Russell Wilson is better than Andrew Luck and remains to be better than Andrew Luck. Nothing changed about that, though, over the last week.
Quick update. Maybe this is a toast, too, on the UW football
huge
front.
Huge toast.
A commitment from three-star linebacker Carson Bruner, the son of legendary Husky and NFL tight end Mark Bruner, the seventh commit now in the 2020 class for Chris Peterson. Let's turn to Husky men's basketball, which had a player of players drafted in last Thursday's NBA draft. It is just the fourth time since the draft went to two rounds that the UW has had multiple players selected. In 2006, that was Brandon Roy and Bobby Jones. In 2012, Terrence Ross and Tony Roden. In 2006, Marquise Chris 16. And DeJounte Murray. 16. Or 2016, rather. Yeah, Marquise Chris and DeJounte Murray. So if history is any guide, one of these players will do very well, and one of the players not so much.
I think I know which one is which.
So Matisse Thybulle does go to the Philadelphia 76ers, who had to trade up to the 20th pick with the Boston Celtics to take him. You did suggest that as a possibility. It does.
Like 2 months ago, I suggested that as a possibility.
I called that the Sixers were going to take him, which was not...
Everybody
not
called it. Okay. You called that you read some mock drafts. Great.
We talked about why this is a good fit for them. I mean, they're a team that has a bunch of star talent, assuming they re-sign Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. They need
guys. Is that a safe assumption?
It's a pretty safe assumption at this point.
Both of them, okay.
Yeah, I mean, they look willing to spend a lot of money, given that they were, an overtime potentially away from beating Toronto, and then the Raptors went on to win the championship.
They were the team who played Toronto best in the entire playoffs.
Yes, although they did not have two of their star players suffer long-term injuries during the series. So that was an advantage for them over Golden State.
We don't know with KD there, but they still played Toronto very well. They played Toronto better than Milwaukee did.
They did.
And they could hypothetically be adding Matisse Thybulle.
Well, they definitely will be adding Matisse Thybulle.
The hypothetical is keeping Tobias Harris and
keeping
Jimmy Butler.
The rest of the team attack. So obviously he has to improve his shooting, but you know his defense will be a boon to the Sixers team in that 3-and-D role that they kind of envision him in. And I think his length makes a lot of sense there.
I guess the one question I have about Matisse to Philadelphia is there are other teams who seem like they need players who are going to be more of an immediate impact player than Philadelphia, especially. No. You don't think that's true?
They have like 6 players on their roster at this point. Like so everybody on the team
Matisse
is free
can
agent.
Instantly come in and be
so
a contributing
he'll be
player
competing
to Philadelphia.
Probably with Zaire Smith, who was their 16th pick of
last year. It feels like they have
sure.
a lot of players, like Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, all kind of around sort of like.
Yeah, those guys aren't going to play 45 minutes a night during the regular season. Like they're going to need other players.
Okay.
And so one thing I think that Matisse
Isn't
brings.
Zaire Smith like more of like a straight guard?
No.
Okay.
He's like a pretty shaky ball handler and developing outside shooter.
Just wait till you see Matisse Thybulle. If you want to see shaky ball handlers.
Well, Matisse is a better passer than Zaire Smith is. He's got that going for him. He's got more court vision. I think the thing that Matisse Thybulle, I mean, Chris Beard has done a really nice job at Texas Tech. I don't know that would disparage.
Oh, I thought he went to Duke. Who am I thinking? I'm thinking of Nolan Smith.
Yeah, Nolan Smith was not very good. Blazers took him one pick ahead of Kenneth Fareed.
He also went to Kentucky, didn't he?
Nolan Smith?
He went to Duke. Okay. I knew nothing about Zaire Smith.
That was a
move along.
That was a tough pick for your lifelong fandom team, the Blazers.
Shouts to Dame Lillard. Anyway.
So the Sixers didn't really have anyone to defend point guards last year after they traded Robert Covington, because that's not really Jimmy Butler's forte. Ben Simmons is in some ways too big to do it, and I think Thybulle could be their best point guard defender next year.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
All right.
So Jalen Noel goes 43rd to Minnesota, way higher than anyone projected, I think. I guess Sam Vecenie had him not that far off. But crucially, in the top half of the second round, where typically you see players get guaranteed contracts.
And you must have been pretty upset when that pick came in.
I'm happy for Jalen Noel.
Ja Morant's dad was his first hater. Jan was your first hater. Your Ferrale's first hater. And you were also Jalen Noel's first hater.
I gotta assume Jalen Noel had some other haters.
But Jalen going with early in the second round.
I mean, the middle of the second round.
Early.
He was the 13th pick in the second
That's
round.
That's early!
Out of 30. That is not early.
15th would have been in the middle.
Oh, this is some Peltoncast math.
It is especially early for Jalen Noel.
Sure. I mean, so the situation he's going into, it'll be interesting to see whether Minnesota projects him as more of a point guard or a wing. They have now suddenly a very full wing rotation. They traded up from the 11th pick to the 6th pick, and everyone assumed that was going to be to draft a point guard. Instead, they took Jarrett Culver from...
Oh, Texas Tech?
Texas Tech.
There we go.
Yeah. And so they add him to Andrew Wiggins, Robert Covington, the aforementioned Robert Covington, and the last year's first-round pick, Josh Okogie, who started a number of games for them after Covington was injured.
If you just want to check off the NBA player Tristan hasn't heard of, Josh Okogie?
Okogie.
Josh Okogie?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really good defender. Can't really shoot so much. They also have Derrick Rose potentially in the mix. He's a free agent this year. And then at point guard, they have Jeff Teague, who's going into the last year of his contract. Tyus Jones is a restricted free agent. So, you know, it's kind of open, I think, more open at that position for him
the
to potentially make a
The kind of just have a lot of guys.
They do have a lot of guys. They may trade Andrew Wiggins. That's a hot rumor.
Is anybody wanting
Unclear.
Andrew Wiggins?
Unclear. Okay. they have a new president of basketball operations, Gerson Rosas, who they hired this year to fill the role that was previously occupied by Tom Thibodeau. So I think it's a good thing to go in as, you know, one of the first draft picks yes. of a new executive who's kind of building the team in his image.
I like it.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this?
No. I mean, I think that the draft played out very nicely for UW.
You liked how it played out for the Blazers, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, getting Nasir Little at pick 25. You know, we got to sort of like pick 20 or so, and it was clear that...
Guys were dropping?
No matter what, the Blazers... I mean, after that Suns pick. No matter what, the Blazers were going to get a solid player with that 25th pick.
I mean, the thing about Nasir Little is, even as the 25th pick, he wasn't particularly productive in college ball. But by that point, the pedigree is so strong. The fact that this is a guy who was considered a top five pick going into the year, him and Bol Bol both.
And he was just a freshman, right?
Yes.
I mean, if they would have drafted Bol Bol with that pick, he probably wouldn't have fit for the Blazers, but I wouldn't have been upset about it.
I would have been very excited about it.
Right? Like, and he was one of the players
that would actually fit the Blazers incredibly well.
Like, really? They just have a lot of big men.
Kinda.
They have three solid, like, center type players.
Who's the third?
They've got Nurk, Zach Collins, and Myers Leonard.
All right. Myers Leonard.
You don't remember Myers Leonard?
I wasn't counting
him. He almost single-handedly won a Western Conference Finals game.
I wasn't counting him as a solid center type, I must admit.
Do I need to bring up the tape?
He had a phenomenal Western Conference Finals. I enjoyed it immensely.
But
I also like traded away Myers Leonard in the dunked-on-mock offseason.
You traded Myers?
I did.
No, I'm okay with that. I want to hear about your Blazers mock offseason in 1 second. But we got to that point.
I don't know if I can spoil it. It's too big a move now.
Well, listen to... You're going to have to tell me this offline.
You already know it. I already told it to you.
But getting Nasir Little, of all players, he was, I think, sort of like the number one rated player on the draft board at that point by Jay Billis. He was somebody who was kind of falling a little bit, going out and snatching him as the Blazers. Felt like they made kind of the obvious pick, but it was a good pick for number 25, where you don't really expect a player who's going to contribute necessarily ever, but somebody who it feels like they went and got like a high upside player who could have been like a late lottery pick.
And it also fits a need for them because Maurice Harkless is going into the last year of his contract. Al-Farouq Aminu is a combo forward, is a free agent right now. And
he's
they traded
for G-Sign.
They traded Evan Turner earlier today. So
he left, right? In the mock offseason, Chief?
He did leave, yes.
Okay.
Partially because of this trade I made.
So, I mean, I was very pleased with it from a Blazers perspective. I felt like that was a good pick. It just something about, like, at that point, getting a player who can potentially contribute right away and then also who has like a high level of potential, that's all you're looking for at pick 25.
Sure.
You hate Nasir Little.
I am less convinced about Nasir Little. But again, at that point in the draft, I think it's a reasonable
good.
Shot.
This is the 25th pick in the draft. If he is good, amazing. If not, whatever. Right?
Yeah.
I guess like replacement level wise, what is the like baseline expectation for the 25th pick?
I mean, at that point, it's probably as likely as not that they never become a rotation player.
There you go. All right. So speaking of the Blazers, kind of going into this offseason, they make this trade, Evan Turner for Kent Bazemore. What did you grade this one for the Blazers?
B+.
B+?
Yeah.
What did you grade it for the Hawks?
C-.
There we go. What was the logic of this trade for the Hawks?
They have a crowd on the wing now, having traded for former Blazer Allen Crabbe. They now have two guys the Blazers
side. They traded for Allen Crabbe?
Yeah, he was part of the Torian Prince trade that cleared cap space for the Nets so that they can sign Durant and Kyrie.
Aggregate it. Hour 152 after we talked about Italian food with Jan. Yeah. Aggregate it right now.
You got to go through all of that. So they now have both Crabbe, and they need to trade for Myers Leonard next so that they can complete the set. They also drafted Cam Reddish, drafted DeAndre Hunter after their trade with New Orleans. So they've got a lot of wing players now, and Bazemore might not have played a lot, and they think that they can play Evan Turner at point guard, which, sure.
I mean, Evan Turner is kind of an enigma because he can play point guard. Like, I was thinking of this.
Yeah, he can.
There were series in the playoffs where he was unplayable and also series where he kind of looked like the best player on the court.
I did wonder if that playoff performance was going to be kind of a guide for him. Like they could play him as a power forward where his non-shooting is not quite as big of an issue. Play him as a point power forward.
I saw
forward.
Him like airball some short jump shots.
But it's less of an issue if you're putting three perimeter players around him than if you're playing with him with more traditional big men.
He's like... Worst case scenario, Ben Simmons.
But so Bazemore is actually, as I brought up the tweet and it got retweeted a few times, he was the player I wanted the Blazers to target in 2016.
There we go.
He ended up going for more money than I expected that year. And He hasn't been wildly productive in Atlanta, but he's been a more valuable player over the last 2 years than Turner has.
I freaking love Kent Bazemore, though. I mean, culture-wise, we love Kent Bazemore.
Yeah. Everybody... He's going to recruit Steph Curry to come play for the Blazers.
There we go.
He was the one who famously got Steph Curry to Under Armour. I mean, not really, but he was a
reasonable
factor.
Take. Everybody likes Kent Bazemore, though, right?
But everyone loves Evan Turner, too.
I don't know. Yes. We're talking podcasts are coming to Portland.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, the home of podcasts. Vince Carter's next. You know how much Vince and Kent Bazemore would love Portland?
Vince Carter at the minimum actually is not the worst idea. Keep that in mind for the mock-off season.
They're going to have to hire Ashley Finberg to the website.
Sorry, Casey. It's been a good run. No, they can both work together.
So you like this trade?
I do.
What else do they do?
I don't know now. So I think they probably will let Aminu go. The challenge they have, though, is that if they want to re-sign any of Hood, Curry, or Enes Kanter, which is a real long shot, they probably have to use their taxpayer mid-level to do it because all of those guys, they only have non-bird rights on, which are very limited. You can only give them a 20% raise off of last year and go over the cap to do it. So they have to choose between using their taxpayer mid-level to bring in someone from the outside or re-signing one of those guys. And it's possible that Hood and Curry could be more expensive than that taxpayer mid-level.
It was a weird playoff run where at various times it made each of these players seem like extremely valuable players.
Yes.
I mean, that's what all playoff runs do, I think, realistically, is they turn role players into seeming like they're extremely valuable players. But to me, the main thing to remember for the Blazers is where you found these players.
Yeah, I mean, Seth Curry was coming off an injury. They got him at a relative bargain.
Seth was the only one who I'm like, if they re-sign Seth, I'm okay with that. But it's like, we're talking, I don't describe it as scrap heap, but like Rodney Hood and Enes Kanter were mid-season signings who were just out there, yep. Right? Anybody could have signed them.
Yep.
Just because
Hood was a trade. They had to give up 2 second-round picks to get him.
Whatever. Anybody could have traded 2 second-round picks.
Other people did want Kanter. He chose the Blazers over, notably, the Lakers, which was a great decision, as it turned out.
Huge.
So let's not downplay this too much.
The most important thing is not about those exact players. It's about the spirit of the players. And
Think that, hey, because we found this player, he's a great player. Yes. It's where do we find the next version of this player? So I think there's a possibility of them going out and trying to look for like some cheaper replacements.
But also developing players through your own system.
So Anfernee Simons is going to play a bigger role next year for sure. Gary Trent might.
Yes.
Jake Lehman could if they re-sign him. He's a restricted free agent.
Jake Lehman was a monster during the middle of the season.
I feel like Dragan Bender would be an interesting player for the Blazers in their development system because he's still super young. He's definitely younger than Cameron Johnson. With the Sunstick 11th, 100% he is.
So good.
They're probably not going to bring him back. And
Cameron Johnson's 60, right?
If it worked for Dragan Bender, he would actually be a really good fit for the Blazers.
I like Dragan Bender.
So
you going into the draft you loved Dragan Bender.
Oh, he was number 2 on my board. I had Brandon Ingram.
You feared the dragon.
I probably should have feared him as it turned out. So that's an interesting name. I think this is a really random one, but I felt like Mike Muscala might make some sense.
You're telling everybody about Muscala to the Blazers
because he could play center while Nurkic, if he's not ready. By the way, was in at Angel of the Winds Arena.
There we go.
Watching the Storm on Friday night. Yusuf Nurkic. Felt a little Nurk fever in the building. If he's not ready to play...
Did they show him on the screen? Did people cheer?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Not as much as when he showed up at Blazers games.
Shockingly. Yeah. Not as much as when he showed up in the playoffs at the Blazers game after being injured.
Nurkic or Muscala could play some center while Nurkic is sideline, and he can also play some power forward.
Don't you think Zach Collins and Myers-Leonard could do the same thing, though?
Much higher in Myers-Leonard's ability to contribute next season than I am, or Terry Stotts is, I'm pretty confident.
Didn't he start in a Western Conference Finals game?
Yeah, that was a specific matchup against a specific team that's very different than playing all 82 games during the regular season.
Be cool.
You be cool.
All right.
Let's talk very quickly about the handful of players with UW and Seattle ties who are on the market. Marquise Chris is out there after the Rockets last year declined the fourth year on his rookie contract. I'd say it's probably worse than 50-50 whether he's in the NBA next year.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the Guangdong team that's signing Marquise Chris.
Jamal Crawford at the tender age of, let me pull this up here. It's either 39 or 40. He is 39.
Okay, I really appreciate Jamal Crawford because a lot of times I look up professional athletes and I'm like, how old are they? I'm like, they must be like Megan Rapinoe today. I was like, Megan Rapinoe must be like so old. And she was born 2 months after me. And I was like, I was like, are you kidding me? But Jamal Crawford is actually kind of old.
Jamal Crawford and Sue Bird are holding it down for us.
There we go.
Yeah, he had that huge game for the Suns in their last game of the season.
He's signing somewhere, right? Jamal Crawford's getting a contract.
I mean, he's such a respected veteran around the league. You would think that...
Jamal Crawford...
You know who he's actually a really good candidate for?
Who?
The Lakers.
There we go. Jamal Crawford can put up buckets. Still, to this day.
That would be great. I hope that happens.
All right, Terrence Ross.
Terrence Ross, who's probably in line for a pretty big payday. There's talk of like $15 million a year. He had the third most threes ever by a reserve in a season last year, or third or fourth.
Terrence Ross is such a good role player, right?
I mean, he's not as good a defender as you would like, but
he could he be a Rocket?
Well, they have no money, so no.
God, the Rockets would love to have Terrence Ross, though, right?
I mean, he's not quite as good a switch defender as they would like, but offensively, he would be great for them. I think I mean, Orlando has some luxury tax concerns if they re-sign Nikola Vucevic. So maybe he could go elsewhere. I'm not sure where that would be, though, necessarily.
Okay, and then Isaiah.
Isaiah Thomas, who last week was at practice with the Storm, served as a practice player for them after tweeting about it.
So we thinking like a one-year deal?
They do need a point guard right now. You know, he's about Sue Bird's height. I do not know where Isaiah is going to land. I am going to be fascinated to see if someone thinks he can kind of get back to the form we saw. It was two seasons ago. He was the best player on a team that was in the Eastern Conference Finals. It feels like much longer than that.
That is a weird one.
So it'll be interesting to watch, as will all of free agency.
All right. Well, we'll have a better sense of this the next time we talk.
Yeah, I guess so. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.